to have your faces melted with only the heaviest breakdowns by Dr. Bob and the cowgirls from hell. But get there early and get in the pit for opening act Elmer Jensen and the Sucker Penetrators. But stick around for the Musky 360 after party as DJ Tommy Fresh will be spinning his new techno record, Northwoods Space Freak.
No, not happening. The Musky Shop Bash, July 18th, Minocqua, Wisconsin, at the Musky Shop underneath the Big Top tent. You will find our biggest sale of the year. Plus, meet the vendors and manufacturers with over 36 in attendance. This will be the biggest musky fishing event of the summer. Food, drink, and don't forget the free raffles with tons of musky fishing gear given away to our customers. Saturday, July 18th, Musky Shop Bash, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Hey, Steve, what's
going
on?
Will you be in attendance for the brutality?
The Bash, July 18th. I'm getting excited.
Get the hot dogs ready, folks.
Hot dogs, brats.
Brats.
Soda. Yeah, it'll be Elmer's birthday. He'll be cooking. Yeah, it's going to be... epic, among other things.
I've seen it. I don't know if you've seen this year's collector's can.
I have seen it. Yes. It's outrageous.
Nectar of the musky gods. So anyway.
Is that what it was called?
Yeah. You'll be excited too, Jay. I finally, you hear that?
Yeah. This
chair's not squeaking.
So hey, last week did you replace it or did you get some oil?
Hit it with the old WD-40. Sorry, but it was squeaking. Chair. I saw an email from somebody. I was like, there's an oscillating fan. It's called a computer. Frickin' has to run. Has to stay cool. Studio. Between that and the squeaking chair, my bad. So,
frickin'. These things happen. It did get a little squeaky last week.
It was a bit much. A bit much, so. not distracting at all. Other than that, what is it looking like in the woods of the north? What's going on up there? Busy?
Well, Memorial Day weekend is wrapping up. Yeah, it's real busy.
Hellscape on the water. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty yeah, much. Went out to the river last couple of days. I checked out a couple small lakes I wanted to go to, but it was like they're a little crowded.
I imagine. So it's funny when you live in touristy areas. I'm right on the cusp of one. You're right in the heart of one, and it's just like, here they come. Mm-hmm. If it's tourist season, why can't we shoot them? That's
Unleash the hounds.
What's going on up there? Anything to note or is weather pattern? What's kicking there? I know Josh Krieger texts. He's going to be over his Northwoods Musky report. More on that later here once he gets this first little week under his belt. But what was it like out there?
Things are heating up in terms of getting above normal weather for a change.
Heat.
So,
right.
Yeah, we got a warm, dry stretch coming, 80 degrees every day. So, yeah, weed growth today and a little bit of pickup and activity. And, things are churning and burning.
People in the Northwoods are breaking out their jorts. Is it that hot?
It's 80 degrees,
Wow. They're all
sunny.
Wow. It's jorts weather there in the Northwoods, folks.
Break them out. Flea market kicked off today and everything. It was crazy driving through that.
Now. It's almost civilized. You just throw on your Brewers t-shirt and your Drink Wisconsinably hat and your pair of torn up jorts and go straight to the flea market.
And you find your local brat festival. I'm sure there's one cooking somewhere.
Local brat festival. The whole
people don't know what brats are, but yeah, it's an important thing in Wisconsin, obviously.
Wisconsin is just one giant brat fest, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it is the season.
It's cool. That's fun. that you're finally back to normal. Just weeks ago, misery, and now you'll forget, right? Summer eases in, and you're like, oh, it's lovely up here before the suffering begins again. So, anyway, I'll tell you, I did the best thing I could have done in a long time, which is not be out this weekend.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it gets hairy out by you. I know, the traffic just getting to and from the lake.
I need a couple days, to be honest. I've been on the boat. Like, heck, last week I was just bemoaning, or just a couple days ago, bemoaning how much I've been out. So nice to do that and not have to deal with all the funsies. Nothing wrong if you got out, but I it's so weird when you got the ramp and the water to yourself 99% of the time, and you show up and you're fighting with people to get at the ramp, you know. Get out of the way, you know, old normal guy.
The first ramp I checked out on Saturday was, I'm like, yeah, there's just too much. You'd have to park way off to the side in the woods, so I went out to the river, and I think there was one rig there. So,
Nice.
Problem solved.
Can't go wrong there. But I'll tell you, just took a couple days here, but it's just been dialed, you know, just staying dialed. And finally, down in this neck of the woods, if you're in the south, I think I know it was hitting in Texas, because I was talking to the fine folks there at Livingston, and just like, here comes all the rain we missed from spring. Right? It's coming now. Mm. Just dumping buckets. So, you know, definitely going to change some things, which is much needed. Water levels, hopefully, we'll see. Hopefully for the southern folks, will be there. And I'll tell you, whether it be, you know, here, Kentucky, any of the mid, you know, kind of the my region, if you will, definitely help knock down water temperatures a bit. Because we're on the cusp, just barely on the cusp of getting to that hot point already, which is hot and stagnant ain't good. You know, so that'll keep things fishable for a bit longer here. You know,
it's
funny, by the time you guys open up, you know, down here, you start shaking your head. Well, I say open up, sorry, they've been open, but always, you know, think of Wisconsin as the Memorial Day opener. But you know, you look at that, and a lot of times by early June, it's already too hot in the south for a lot of bodies of water. You know, if, and again, I'm not getting down the 80 degree rabbit hole here, but we'll see how long that holds off. Much less, Jay, there's nothing more miserable than being on a boat and it's 98. That's not the best time you've ever had in your life, you know, standing out there baking. So hopefully this will keep all the temps down and nice and acclimated for us. But other than that, what do we got cooking here? Anything new show up this week? I don't believe since the last time. We had late episode this week. Nope. Same as it ever was. You may find yourself with nothing new. Same as it ever was. But I think I asked you just when we did the pod earlier in the week if there's anything on the horizon. So I'm sure there'll be a thing or two matriculating in, but now's
hard to say when it's going to come in. So
now's the time to use what you got, finally. You know, it's cool though. I'll look at, say, like the app usage and the amount of people that are in there and using Moonphase, using this, using that. It's always fun to see, you know, the real velocity kicking off. And I know Minnesota's just not long, Jay.
Right around the corner. Isn't it next weekend? Yeah, next Saturday?
I think
the opener for Minnesota.
They're going to be out there swinging and flinging. So,
then the week after that would be, is it the second weekend of June for most of Canada?
We're looking like last, I believe.
Something like that.
Yeah, it's not second. No, they're nowhere near. It's last weekend in June. Sorry if I'm getting it wrong. I probably am wrong. I haven't looked at it forever.
Oh, that's late. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have a lot of time.
No, you don't.
You know, let's look here. Oh, I should know this off the top of my head. I haven't been up there that early for a long time. Make sure it hasn't changed. Saturday.
There's a bunch of people coming in, going to Canada, but Saturday. Okay.
And, you know, that's the interesting thing. It's like, here for too long, we'll get Glenn McDonald or Danny or Herbie, or, you know, a little more Canada focus when we get going that neck of the woods going. But, you know, that is an interesting point of how short of a truncated season you have. And bringing that up just brings up the point of, you know, you look at the life cycle. I was thinking about this week of the extended, like these periods that I go through down here, which is, spring is really long, right? It's these extended lulls where okay, spring is spring just like anywhere else, but how long that takes place, and then how long summer lasts, and how long fall lasts. We have these extended kind of scald drudgery things where, you know, up north you get a little bit more ease on the life cycle where things are happening faster. You know what I'm saying? You have a shorter season per se, but things tend to recover faster. It's almost like there's a biological pressure on them, but they know, hey, clock's ticking. Because you look at, you know, here clock's essentially, ticking. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got third Saturday in June till how long you want to be out there. Middle of September, first October, it's miserable. You don't have long. So it's a lot
you
of
barely,
weight.
Yeah, that's crazy. They barely have, you know, two warm months, you know?
Yeah. But then the way it's going this year, they'll probably have one warm month.
Well, hopefully the ice is off in the bay in front of the Danny. So
yeah, I haven't talked to anybody really. So I chatted with a couple of them, just not musky, you know, fishing stuff, just other stuff. And I didn't really ask, but I know it's been a slow start. So we'll get an update on that. But we're finally there, and it's always kind of funny watching from my purview of how. Like I said, how those events take place and how that truncation happens. Because what I'm hearing in Wisconsin and, like, you know, where you're at in the spawn, I'm sure we'll hear more about that later, because I think a lot of that stuff fell. And I think a lot of people are fishing right now while the spawn is taking place. That's what I'm hearing anyway, right? And so just the way the season opened up and then that truncation of lifespan. So it'll be interesting. That's, I think, the biggest gauge of where you're at seasonality-wise is how fast the rebound is. And that has a lot, or says a lot about kind of how the rest of the season will go up there. So anyway, we stacked them up. Everybody must have been sitting around coming up with questions, Jay, for holiday here. So we got a few to get here. Cooper. Okay. Oh, well, we set him up nice. Says, I have a Lac Seul trip coming up first week of July. I've been to Lac Seul many times with almost zero success using tactics I use in Wisconsin and on Lake of the Woods. I was just wondering if there's something on that lake I could be missing. Maybe they aren't eating the forage I think they are, or something of that nature. Any direction would be fantastic. Love the podcast. So Cooper, love the question. We are talking Lac Seul. If you don't know Lac Seul, let me explain this to everybody. So Lac Seul, if you look at your map, right, Jay, get your map out. You have it?
Bingo.
Got it. Jay, it's right there in the armchair. Lac Seul map, Northwest Ontario map. It's there. It's actually in Jay's mind. He just had to pull it up like a...
Yeah, it's just to the left of the Catnapper 5000 right chair I got. So, yeah, so, here it is.
If we're looking at Northwest Ontario, we're looking at our musky waters, if you will. We got Lake of the Woods. We got Eagle, right? You go from Lake of the Woods, we jumped a little bit to the east. You got Eagle. But above both of them, above what seemingly is the entire quote-unquote musky country, is this monstrous body of water, which is a reservoir called Lac Seul, right? Monstrous in comparison to Lake of the Woods, right? In comparison to Eagle, Lac Seul is a ocean, right? So it's fine. And I didn't know we were going to bring it up, but I just mentioned a couple names, Danny and we look at Danny, we look at Herbie and all this stuff, right? So my Canadian guys, none of which, and maybe, let me look here. If we go from, like, Deception to Ear Falls, waterway, you know, as far as, like, the overall size of the body of water, Lake of the Woods-ish, I don't know. I hate to count. You know how people do. It's like, oh, well, the acreage is this or is that. But, nonetheless, big old body of water kind of connects to everything, connects to, I believe, don't hold my feet to the fire, but connects, I think, to Manitou, everything over to the east, and it just goes on and on and on and on. Okay, so big body of water. What you have on Lac Seul is not a lot of lake knowledge, right? So Lac Seul is so interesting because very few people fishing it in comparison to everything else. I mean, if you go like Canadian musky pressure. It's almost that order.
Yeah.
It's like Lake of the Woods is the most pressure. Eagle somewhere in the middle. Lock Soul is slim to none.
Probably.
There's a reason. And this guy's saying he's struggling there. Somebody's going, he's in Canada. So you don't know. This is why I'm bringing it up. Say you have no clue about Lock Soul and you're going, how's he not catching fish? Lock Soul is low density. And according to all my sources, all my personal experience there, everyone catches their fish from Chamberlain Narrows up to Wapisi. Right? There's a little bit of stuff to the west of that, but the east side of that lake is about the only place you're going to run into a muskie. I've talked to guides that have guided walleye all over the place. They don't run into them, right? I know Danny Herbeck's gone up there, done walleye tournaments. I know other people that have done walleye stuff. They're not running into muskies anywhere other than the east side, right? So, first and foremost, if you're targeting muskies, here to answer his question, hopefully you're on the east side. Let's get that out of the way, right? But the complexity of that body of water is a bit much. Now, things that I know about Lock Soul that I can share with somebody and be like, okay, hey, this is where we're at. Not a tremendous amount. There's very few people that have a tremendous amount of knowledge. There's a few guides that run around up there. Short season, you know, doing this, doing that. So there's not a tremendous amount of intel on that lake. What I can tell you, and you probably are going there already because of this, they are absolute mega tankers. Like, that's it. Like, if you were going to go, okay, if somebody picks up, you're looking around and you see something that says, oh, okay, dude caught a 62-incher, and he said, you know, if his locks, I might believe it, right? That's pretty believable. There's very few places in the habitat range that could do that. That's one of those places that has, you know, the ability to do something crazy. So what you need to look for there, however, is going to be just anything else that's Canadian. You need to get tight, right? A bit tighter. I think a lot of guys think they're going like a big game, a big off-structure game. Shockingly for me, going from, say, Eagle, like doing Goon, doing the other stuff, right?
Yeah.
Is when I'm on Lock Soul, I've been too far out, right?
Out from that sweet spot on the east?
No, I'm saying too far from cover and structure.
Cover
and structure, yeah. Sorry if I didn't segue that way. I'm going through my brain. We don't answer too many Lock Soul questions here, but not many people fish it. First and foremost, again, I'll give the caveat, temper your expectations. Let's get that out of the way, right? Don't expect a lot of action, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that I noticed, because again, the whole rule of I'm fishing mid shell and deep, I'm doing all, wherever I'm at, whether I'm here in my backyard or I'm all the way at the top up there, is I am still adhering to those rules. And every time I'm in Lock Soul, everything points to getting in tight. I don't know why. That's been my experience there. It's almost like we were discussing earlier. Is it a matter of the seasons are so short? Is it a matter of why, right? There's not a lot. I don't have a lot of why. I just know that's been my personal experience, that the fish I've caught on Lock Soul and the bites that I've had and the most action I've had have been getting up tight, kind of close quarters combat with cover and structure, getting into weeds that I can, and then just slinging and winging and covering water. It didn't seem the last time I was there, and it's hard to gauge because you're not going to get like enough contacts to build exceptionally substantial patterns as far as like what they'll hit that day, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm used to that. Where I fish all the time, you're not going to get a lot to work with. I'm comfortable with that, but what I would say is this: obviously, blades are going to work where you have very little pressure, right? This is one of those places where strap up the double 9s, strap up the double 10s, and cover water, right? the pressure stacking we've talked about and all this stuff, it's not there. The fish getting educated is not there in the same way, shape, or form, right? You can get away with blades. You can get away with a lot of coverage, right? Like I said, it's kind of an oddity to say get in tighter, but that has what has worked for me, right? And I don't know the why per se of why they seem to persist there. Right now, what I can tell you is if like last year there was a late spawn or season was already kicking in on Eagle and they were still spawning fish, Lock Sewell is going to be as bad or worse, right? It's a tighter time frame. But what I'd recommend is go big or go home, to be honest with you, on that lake, and that's the way I fish it. I'm not there to get a 36. I've never seen a 36 there. I've heard you know what I'm saying? It's kind
of
like
I've heard of a lot of really good topwater fishing on that body that's of water too go. Back in the day. Yeah.
Still.
Is there better current or a different current situation on that east end that's the sweet spot? Or
I'd be lying. If I said
it's a low current system though, right? I mean, it's a river system, but it
just depends. I mean, I've been out there before mm-hmm. where you drive by and there's nothing floating and here's logs. I mean, there's plenty of stuff to hit there on a bad day. What will keep a lot of people off that is there's not a lot of windbreak, right? So it can get pretty nasty. It can get nautical in a heartbeat. Much less you're so far up north, you're not going to get heads up on it, right? It's one of those ones. Last year, it's like I'm looking at check the weather report before you get out of cell signal, right? Hope everything goes right, and I'm watching the horizon all day going, oh, please don't be a rogue one coming or the weather changed. And then one day it did, you know, where it's just you get smoldered out of there. But and I think a lot of guys don't realize is to functionally fish that without making a gigantic run, right? I'm talking running from like Deception all the way to Wapeezy, all this stuff is houseboat, right?
I've had buddies in the past mm-hmm. that have done houseboat trips on that lake, and they're like a whole different transport. Right. You know, you're towing a boat behind that. And, mm-hmm. That's how you're sleeping, and you got the mice in the houseboat. You know,
you got everything.
Like, you got a little bit of everything.
But I mean, as far as if you're going up there and doing your thing and trying to dial in, I'm going to go big. I am going to vary speed. I've done well there on bigger presentations, but not burning, and exceptionally well on walk the dog topwaters. Mm-hmm. Exceptionally well. There's, like I said, I mean, to sit here and go this, and this, or how much is the current impact? I wish I could tell you. I know it has an impact, but to what degree? My sample, so I'm always talking about samples. So I can't sit here and put a stamp on it, go this, that, or the other, right? So, again, it's one of those bodies of water that has endless potential, but the knowledge base, what to pull from it is very low. It's very slim. Where I would go is if you're spending time up there, you need to be, and you intend to go back, you need to document everything, right? You're not going to get much info out of anybody, if any, and you're not going to have anything to fall back on. Now, I've lived through this, patterning places that nobody else is doing anything with, and it feels stupid year one. Here's my little scribbling of notes. You know, get on your Muskie 360 app, use the journal on there, and you got your little notes, and you go, okay, I've got 7 days of notes. It's a cumulative amassing of data, right? And so you might be able to glom from that. And the thing is this, that's a challenging fishery, but just it's one of those places, and you can even tell my stance on it a little bit differently. I think at the given the right moment and the right opportunity, you could pull just about anything out of that place. I've seen stuff that have made.
I think that's why people do tricks. It's so remote. Like you said, it's challenging, but you know the reward is potentially enormous.
And that's the thing. If when you see it with your own eyes and go, oh God, holy cow! Perfect fishing point. We mentioned it once before. There was a short that went around of these people that are fishing a 10-inch hot tails glider. And the fish is coming in, and that is a Loch Sool fish, and it is every bit of way big. It ain't 55. It's way big. You know, it's got some shoulders on it, and it's the real deal. But again, you're not going to run up there and just go gangbusters on. So, like I said, hopefully that helps. Just be smart about taking notes. Be smart about what you're doing. I would make sure that I have a smattering of everything. I would make sure that I'm competent with everything. So, Cooper, like if you're like, okay, I'm good with three kinds of presentations or four, make sure you're really comfortable with everything so you can be rotating through. Right, you're not going to get that little piece of info at the dock where old Lenny Krexbaugh got one on a Rizzo Whiz. You got to figure it out. So it's kind of like musky fishing, you know, for 101. There's not a lot of info to go off of. So make sure that you're keeping notes and make sure you're rotating through everything. You know, I wish I could give you more, but if you catch a 60, let us know. It's one of those places, Jay. It's a wonder to see. And then also, too, when you get out there and you go, there's no one else here at all, anywhere close, that could help me.
that's crazy.
That's a feeling. Dan, Slimelander. Dan from Slimelander.
Slimelander Dan, okay.
Longtime listener, longtime emailer. Here she goes. Greetings from Slimelander. I've been doing entire lake maps on my auto chart live. What is the best way to utilize these maps knowing my conditions and weather? It sure is a game changer. P.S. I sent some lake maps photos of to the app if you want to open it. Okay, so best way to utilize these. And he's going to take and he's going to factor in his conditions and weather in doing so. Well, if you have auto charts of lakes that no one else has auto charts of, you have a distinct advantage. Let me see your auto charts. Oh, there's his email. He has done good audit. Okay, there's your thorough. That's what I'm looking for, right? So you pass the test there. We have thoroughly auto charted this lake. So if you don't know what an auto chart is, that's where you go out and you scan the lake yourself and make your own maps. I have multiple bodies of water that I've done that for. You feel like you're wasting precious fishing time. However, you're making your time way better once you have these. You know, if you're on a lake that doesn't have a map, it's a must, right?
Yeah, maps always miss stuff.
Well, they miss stuff. And also, too, there's so many little bodies of water. Heck, I know big bodies of water, speaking of Canada, that don't have any maps, right? And that's how you end up, I mean, okay, parlaying back into Canada. Eagle notoriously doesn't have a map. Loch Sool notoriously doesn't have a map, right? Goon, a lot of other stuff. You might have a camp map that says there's a rock out there. Don't hit it, right? You might have a camp map that marks Eddie's weed bed. We've talked about, you know, I think it was last week I was going on the tirade about if you can see it. You know, if it's marked on the overarching rule on that, if it's marked on the camp map, it's been fished. I can promise you, right?
100%.
Right, it's on there. But the amount of stuff people miss is otherworldly. And that's one thing, like Eagle, I'll go to that. Not having a definitive map, you look at mine, Herbie's, any of it. You got a base map, right? And you got some lines. Really lackluster contact. You're not seeing the rock hump in the main basin. You don't know where the contact point on that point is. You don't know that reef structure comes out 200 more yards. Right? You had to find all of that. Now, you know, it's been in the works for a hot minute about some maps up there. Whenever that happens, whatever. But the time, and Dan from Slimelander, thumbs up to you for spending the time. This definitely took him some serious time, not throwing a rod to do this. One thing I'll tell you, when it comes to the auto charting, it's a heck of a thing to do while you're trolling. Right?
There you go. Yeah,
you want to talk about feeling productive? A, you got baits wet. B, you're mapping something that's not mapped. It's sure. It's a super clutch, good thing to be doing. So, to that point, when you have a map of something that is thorough and is well done, Dan, at this point, what you can do with that is freaking understand the movements, the interconnection between places that are productive. Where did they go? Well, what logically, again, based on the rules of structure fishing, how do these places interconnect? That's why it's so important to me of A, having a map or doing your map studies. Studies sound so lame. Well, everybody turn to chapter 4 from, you know, let's not make it that lame. It's not scholarly. But sitting there and staring at the map and not superficially just going, oh, there's Snakehead Bay. And you look at that and you go on from it. You know, any map of any map that has in-depth bathymetry, a lot of contours, a lot of detail, the more you look at it, the more you see. And I revisit stuff, Jace, that I'm fishing every freaking day. And I still find things. Right? Yeah, so in the way I look at maps, and this might overarch his question a bit, but the way to look at a map is look at it the first time, right? Get acclimated with something and then start looking at small sections, because, you know, when you look at a whole lake map, you're looking at the whole map or the whole lake, right? Obviously, you can't fish that all at once. Look at productive places and then spend time really looking at what's connecting them, right?
Okay.
You'll start seeing that it's not arbitrary, that this bay and that bay and that other bay tend to have fish in them, right? Why? And a map is the answer to why quite often. Why is this bay productive? We all know if you musky fish for more than 38 minutes, you all know a productive weedy bay, right? Here's the weed line. It has muskies, yada, yada. Well, you stare at it long enough, and once you get past the fact that it has muskies in it, you start going, what's going on? What are the properties of this that are important? What's happening here? Is it a structural thing? Is it a sunlight thing? And the more you think about it, the more it tends to reveal, and then you can take that and apply it elsewhere. Does this other bay that I don't fish, does it have similar features? Right? Yeah. Is there another, and I mean, I can think of some stuff on Eagle where it's like, there's some big stuff everybody knows, and there's still, I still have, it's not a, you know, not everybody knows it. It's not like nobody else knows it, but there's a few things I feel like nobody else knows, but I'm sure somebody else knows, but there's a couple, you know what I'm saying? You're like, okay, I still have a couple secrets of just random rock piles smaller than your boat. Like, that's not on a map, but it would be on a contour map, right? But you go, that's money in this scenario. That's money in this scenario. So you start again, just like anything else, compounding and looking at the greater detail. And I'll tell you, like I said, look, don't just pull up your whole map and go, there it is. Dig into sections, right? And one of the best things you can do, because we all know a bite, it doesn't last all day, right? It just doesn't last all day. Once you get a fish in the boat, and then you are satiated and realize, hey, I'm not going to get another one. Like, things change or just kind of died off for a little bit. One of the best things I've done is get a fish in the net and then sit down and look at where you really were. Right? Where is my track actually at? Because the further removed you are from the moment, the less your recall is valuable. Right. We all tend to color things. Right. Of this happened or that happened, or, you know, the details, the finite detail. So, you know, it's hard to do and you feel like you're not being as productive. But again, catching a fish and then going, OK, what did I do on my trail? That's usually the last thing on people's mind. Right. You can generally, if you have trails running on your trolling motor, you can generally see when you hook up with a fish, because you'll see the drift off or the drift in, right? I'll look where did that thing drift? What was going on? Where was I at right, like when I hooked that fish before the boat's just drifting in or out, or we're dealing with landing this fish? And that's been super valuable because I've noticed a few things, you know. Oh, I was actually on this, not on that. You know what I'm saying? Or I was inside of a structural element, or this was my distances. And when it comes to mapping, that's stuff I'll look at that I think, again, if you're looking in at the large scale versus the micro scale, really influences end results, right? Because if you go back and you look at your big map and you're looking at everything at once versus going to the tiny, you know, detail of, okay, we just got to fish and what's happening right now, right here, this is how this lined up, is just like the value of a good map and how you should look. I mean, how you're looking for things. It's kind of like a never-ending treasure hunt.
Yeah, and the contours too, you know. That's one thing you can find detail with the contours is the bottoms, you know, content, you know, hard bottom, you know, okay. Well, this whole ledge, you know, this whole drop off is rock. And this one over here is really soft bottom, et cetera, et cetera. You know, that could help dial you in.
Well, and like I said, he was asking about self mapping, but I mean, this applies to everybody. That's what I'm saying. That is, It's applicationable, or I can't even talk today. It's applicable on all fronts. And like I said, I think important, and another important thing I'd recommend is I don't have a name for it. Let's call it driveway time.
Driveway time?
With your fish finder and with those maps and looking at them not on the water, right? It's dorktopia here, but I do it all the time. All the time. Like if I found something new, or I think I saw something new, just when you're in the driveway, say the wife's going to the store, go out there, turn the thing on, sit down at it and look at that area. Right.
And just make sure she leaves first.
Make sure she leaves first, or have her tow you down the road, whatever. As long as you're not in the water, it's just a different experience because there's not that pressure on you to produce a fish or catch a fish or, oh, there's bait jumping. Yeah. And I think that's one thing that's lost. And I just recall so often sitting down back in the day with paper maps. You know, you could do that with your phone, but it's just not the same as actually having your graph. You know, I've not gone to the extreme of like having a hookup in the house. Maybe you could. Maybe you have a power adapter and a battery in the house. I don't know. But if I was snowed in all winter, that's what I'd be doing. Spend some time on that front. But anyway, gosh, dork fest, Jay. That's all this is. Dork fest. Colton, how's it going? Well, good. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. He says, how's it going? I'm 15 years old, just getting into musky fishing. I've not been fishing for them long, but I've been bass fishing for the last 2 years. Me and my dad were thinking about getting a combo for each of us. What few baits, rod, reels, line, etc. Jay, I'm going to let you take this one. We got a 15-year-old. We got his dad. We need standard setup. We need to get going. You've done that a million times at the shop. Have at it.
Rod and reel combo. Yeah, if you have some level of experience, if you're total entry level, you might want to consider a swivel. That is that bait casting reel that we've been carrying for about a year that does not backlash. And you just have to trust me on that one. It's just like you can't backlash these things.
I tried.
And otherwise, you know, geez, you want to get into a starting bait cast combo, get something 8.5 to 9 foot long, a heavy rod, something powered, you know, kind of in that 2 to 6 ounce range for an applicable rod rating. You want that is minimum and maximum lure weight. So if something is say 1.5 to 2 ounce minimum, you can throw basically any bucktails with it. And if it's rated up to 6, that means that's the extent, that's the high end of how heavy you want to throw without the rod overloading. So that's what lure ratings are in a nutshell, and they are important. You know, you don't want to get one rod that's just too light to do everything. I know this is kind of basic stuff, but you know, if you're getting lured, depending on where you're going, if you're going to the Northwoods or you know, spots in Minnesota, blah, 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 even southern Wisconsin, you know, you've got to have some blades. You've got to have some bucktails. You know, I would get two bucktails as a starter kit. I would get one or two twitch baits, say one deep diving crankbait, and definitely have a dive rise type jerkbait. They're a lot easier to move. They're a lot easier to work properly. You're always in the strike zone. The bait's always working with the dive rise. Yeah. You can't work them wrong, you know. No. You try to work them too fast,
Starting out, I mean, you need
gliders are a little bit more technical, and they require a little bit more time to master.
Do we still have the kits still at the store? It doesn't look like we have the kits on the website. I was just looking for that.
There's a couple elements of that kit I think that aren't available anymore.
Gotcha.
We're waiting for, yeah.
So, we had them at the.
It would be better that we could custom put something together.
Call
for
the
you,
shop. You know? Tell them where you're fishing, number one. Call, ask for somebody, say, hey, ask for Jay. But
you can email us and we'll send you, and we'll just send you links. It's just like, okay, here's the lures. Here's some, you know, basic color patterns to stick with within the lures. Topwaters, I would not go crazy with topwaters. You might want to get one. And some soft plastics and stick with swim baits like the Mustang, like a regular size swimming dog. You can't go wrong with that. They're easy to master. Yeah. You're going to have action with them. And that's part of the program. You want to be baits kind of in the, you want to be fishing in the shallow zone at the right time so that you have, that you have action. You don't want to be beating your head against the wall, kind of fishing deep, rolling the dice for a super hog, you know, off of the deep structure. Not yet. That comes later.
I'd say the biggest thing, you know, and it's cool thing is everybody's at a different place in their musky fishing journey, for lack of a better term. One thing I've told a lot of people at the beginning, generally the baits that are recommended to beginners are highly productive baits. That's one thing to keep in mind. Because people, you know, and I will at least want to say this, and it's just to get the point across if you're ever questioning, like, what bait... The deal with it's every other type of fishing that threw people off, and it's a shame we don't have kits anymore, but you go to Walmart and you see bass fishing beginner kit, right? And it's like the worst crap of all time. You know what I'm saying? In musky fishing, there's not a lot of Pavlum garbage. So any of those recommendations, like if you're going like for a glide bait, okay, Hellhound, it's a great bait.
Yeah, there's one you can work.
There's hardly any guides that don't have them, or, you know, that's the cool thing. Never be hesitant when you hear a lot of the baits. And I've always told new people this: don't be off put by when you hear beginner baits, because it's not that big enough of an industry to have that many tiers of quality. You know what I'm saying? Is like there's not that, you know. You're pretty much everybody has custom stuff to production stuff. It's not that big of a market. So all of the quote unquote beginner baits are like guide ready. And I think the most important thing is having one of each lure class. I think this is the most important thing if you're starting, or say you're going to get somebody started, right? You're trying to set your buddy up. Get one of everything, meaning every lure class. You know, say you
don't. There's not that many of them. It's easy to do.
Right. It's not that many. And you just go, okay, I have a Titan, a Medusa, a swimming dog. I have, you know, one of each, whatever brand you pick. I don't care, you know, but one in each wheelhouse. Because I wouldn't say, like, I always try to pick on myself so we don't make everybody mad. But, you know, I wouldn't go, all right, let's go with a Magnus, a Mustang, and a Minus. No, makes no sense. You know, you go with the Mustang at first, and then you understand a bit more, and you understand. So I think the most important thing is trying to find the most accessible, easiest to use bait of each class. You know, that's a whole other topic, but that would be the thing. What else? 80-pound braided line. You got the prerequisite. And this goes for everybody, whether you've done it for 30 minutes or 30 years, have release tools. That's the one thing. I had this conversation with a guy on the phone the other day, Jay. I wanted to scream. I just wanted to lose my mind. Let's back it up here. Record scratch. Hey, I read one of your articles. Cool. B, I'm calling you to ask about some stuff. Okay. Not how it's usually done, but let's have at it, right? And I got the sense real quick. Guy was definitely early on, but it evolved into, well, you know, this, that, and the other, and he had caught one, but he didn't have this. I was like, and I'm basically saying, you know, hey, these are like kind of my non-negotiables, what to have on board if you want to do this. And he's like, no, I don't think I need that. I'm like, just wanting to scream. You know, I was pro and nice, but you're sitting here going, I get it. When you're first starting off musky fishing, the least exciting things you can buy are the release tools and the right net.
Yeah.
But, and this goes for everybody.
You got to have them.
You got to have them, but here's the thing. Don't be the guy, don't be the guy that has the story about, well, I wish I would have. And I bring up like my buddy Tim from the Netherlands. We're on a big trip to Eagle, his biggest muskie ever. It's absolutely nutty big. Blows out the net because he had a crap net. It's in the net. He already handled it. We just didn't get a picture yet. It's been unhooked. He's had his hands in it. Blah, 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 blah. And it's made for a funny short years back. Remember that, Jay? And he goes, oh, no.
I do.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Tragic. Well,
paid the price there. You know, the old thing. Oh, I don't need Nip-X. Oh, I bought those after I got the crap torn out of my hand, right? Or I killed a fish. So make sure, read up on it. We got it on the app, Musky Fishing 101. There's stuff on there. There's stuff on Musky Shop. There's plenty of good information about what release tools to have, so I won't beat you over the head about that. But just get them. Buy them once and be done. You know, don't regret that. The other thing is this, and it's, again, just a point for anybody that's, maybe you're brushing up. Maybe last year was your first season and you need a refresher. Check your line and leader, right? Check your line and leader continually. And I say this for anybody. Hey, wake up, dude that's been doing it. I've been doing this for 38 years, right? Check your line and leader.
Right. And the snap on the leader. And absolutely. The snap.
Get rid of that when you get in hog.
Yeah, it's really easy with fluoro, too. Most people are using, the majority of people are using fluorocarbon, you know, 130-pound fluorocarbon.
Keep
an eye
on it. Tough,
pretty thick stuff. Rub your finger along that thing if you can feel little nicks in it.
Smooth. Yeah.
You'll feel the nicks.
And I'll say that. Just the, don't say you weren't warned. Let's say you just got out for the first time this past weekend, or you're getting out, or you got your first trip coming up next week, whatever it is, right? Things that are probably not in the front of your mind that need to be in the front of your mind on the boat right now. Getting back into the swing of it if you've been out of the swing. Check your line. Check your leader. Check it periodically throughout the day. Dork fest, but it needs to be done, right?
Check your drag. Yep,
check your drag. Make sure that
not just once. Right. It's not done. Yeah, it's just not one and done when you start. Yeah.
Nope. Check your drag periodically. Remind yourself of that. You go, oh man, somebody's going, well, I wish I would have done that 3 years ago. You know, the little things you need to remind yourself of. That make sure your tools are in order. All the preseason checklist stuff. But this is just an aside because I'm always rambling, Jake.
What?
Something I recommend to people, and I've said this on my boat with clients a lot of times. It's a setup. So let's pretend, Jay, you're a client. You ready? An hour in. We're chilling. You know, I'll ask them, man, everybody, you know, everybody's got a story about what are some of your big screw ups? You know, or it's set up smoother than that. I generally say, ma'am, one time so-and-so, I'll tell the story about the snap opening, right?
Yeah.
And they'll tell you, and be like this, that, and the other, which is, oh, I went to set the hook and the drag wasn't there. It's not something I'm doing right there in the boat, but picking people's brain. And it's like continually the same things, right? Now, I'll use it to readdress things or hey this, hey that. But what I'm getting at is just that sample size on the boat and talking to so many people, the endless stories of set the hook and nobody's home, right? Didn't check the leader and it broke. Oh, my knots were bad. All that stuff. It just stacks up. Now, it allows me to know what I'm dealing with in the boat a little bit and what to check and also blah, 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 blah. But that is so common between people that their drags backed off or their drags are not right and all this other stuff. So what I'm getting at is everybody's got this list or you know what you've done on the water that cost you fish. Before you get dedicated to the stuff this season, do yourself 5 minutes and think about it for a second, right? Because how many times have you made the same mistake later and go, oh, man, right? Why didn't I check whatever that was? Why didn't I do X, Y, and Z? And it's kind of like in the book and in Muskie IQ, I talk about failure analysis and all that fun stuff. Again, dork fest. But the point being is to, you know, prevent future failure. And kind of going through that list before you get into the swing of your season. You know, everybody's geared up. Everybody's got the stuff. There's probably hundreds of thousands of pounds of hook shavings, Jay, from everyone sharpening their hooks, right? But consider, have you thought about mistakes you've made in the past and how you're going to avoid them this year?
Yeah, because the muscle memory is gone, you know. If you live around here, you know,
or just you have,
you know, and when it's a long off season.
And what I mentioned with the clients is like, that's finding a what is the tendency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, for me as a guy, I'm going, oh, if this guy tells me, well, one time I just completely didn't set the hook, and then the next time I didn't set the hook, right? Okay. Now I know what I'm dealing with, but in a cool way, you know, it's a probative question to find out where we're at, but. What I'm saying for somebody that's fishing themselves or fishing with buddies on a trip or a family trip or whatever, just go through that yourself and go, oh, this is the mistake we've always made. This is the mistake I've always made. Whatever it might be, if you think about it, you can address it now instead of just doing it again. You know, oh, we forgot to crank the drags down before we went out. You know, yeah. put a note yeah. on the fish finder. Little mistakes.
Everyone's done it.
I'm telling you. I'm telling you, Greg, oh my God, what does it take to replace the oscillating fan? It's the only thing I can hear as you ramble on. It's not a fan, it's a computer fan. Jay, do you hear a fan?
It's the Stephen Paul Data Center.
It's the freaking massive Macintosh.
I heard they're building a big one in Tennessee.
That's my data center, Greg. What do you got, ears like a bat?
I can't hear it. I cannot hear it, Stephen. I've got headphones on, okay?
I know.
You're good.
He probably was hearing the squeaky chair. Hold on. Let's see if I can. Nope. No squeaks. That. Look at that. That's a
squeak free zone.
Squeak free. Old Greg can hear my fan. Old Greg! Sorry. That's a mighty boosh. Man, I missed that show, Jay.
I didn't even know it left.
I didn't even know. It was like freaking.
Wasn't that like one episode or something?
No, there's a whole series, and frickin' Noel Redding is like now on Great British Baking Show. So okay. That's a whole other thing, which is also another show I enjoy, folks. If you want to know what I do in my free time, watch baking television. Tim, what's the best way to fight a plus 48 fish when you hook them on the figure eight? Ooh, juicy.
Okay. Yeah, okay, good question.
So, how are we contending with big fish in the figure eight here, right? First and foremost, make an assessment, Jay. Make an assessment.
Yeah.
Do you love me? Ever drink Bailey's from a shoe? Sorry. Long story short, dealing with a big fish, figure eight. It's kind of interesting when we get a fish coming in the eight like that. You're generally amped up, right? If you've not caught big fish in the eight, or you're just, you know, adrenaline is going. I'm trying to paint that picture. Most of the time, people freak out. So let's eliminate freaking out, right? Let's not freak out. First and foremost, what does that mean? staying calm. Simple as that. Figure it out on your own. But 99.9% of these fish are lost because people freak out. So if we can get past that, what do we do? Click your free
spool. Step one.
Step one. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If I see that thing coming around the bend, and it is, I mean, it's not like, okay, that's the definitive number. I generally, if I see a 40 coming, I backing it up even another step, this is because of the old Abu Garcia reels. I do not click my drag open or click my reel open when I figure eight, right? It's just an old habit. You should teach yourself to free spool in the figure eight automatically. For me, I don't. Sorry. But I see a 40 coming. I don't even worry about it. Pop him out. I'm going to drag him around like a dog, right? A big fish, a 4-footer, 46s, 47s, 48s or above, you're not going to be able to just drag them around by the nose without a good bit of resistance. So, free spool. We want to have thumb pressure on that. And when I say thumb pressure, I mean you are locked down like Fort Knox with your thumb. Because when a fish of that caliber grabs the bait in the figure eight, it's going to grab it and it's going to hit it hard. Right? Just the sheer weight of the motion of that fish. Occasionally they'll nip it, but most of the time they're going to hammer it if they're in the eight or they're staying at the eight of that caliber. The free spool is going to allow you to not stress your signal chain. It's not going to test, is your knot bad? Is your leader bad? We were just talking about, is your drag bad? If you're on free spool, the only thing that's walking and talking is that rod in your thumb, right? So I want to have that fish on thumb pressure right then and there. What I'll generally do is come in, I'm in free spool, bam, I've hooked up to this fish. Most of the time, if done correctly, it's hit on the outside turn, right? Majority of your muskies are going to eat on the outside turn of your figure eight. I want to swing it back in towards the boat. If you can imagine, finish the eight with the fish on the other end. Okay? The reason being is I don't want my arms extended and I don't want to have the rod out in the eight and that fish hits and then I'm letting him go away from me, right? If it hits in the eight and say it's on the outside corner, if done appropriately, you can come in, you bring the rod in. If you figure eight in your head, Jay, are you doing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
We're on that first outside turn. It eats in the middle of the outside turn. Bam. Pull it in. Bring its head back towards you, right? That's what I like to do. Then after that, we're going to figure out what it's going to do. That's my first move. If it'll come with you right there, you can usually keep walking it or walk it around the boat, right? I don't want that fish going away from me, right, in the eight and cutting away. So if you imagine it finishes that turn, it eats and it's going away from the boat and I'm on thumb and now the rod is you're getting drug out towards away from the boat. Try to bring him in, walk his head down the side of the boat, right? If you got a quick net man, a lot of times you can take that fish back in, walk him around the other circle in the netting. If it's a really big fish or it's got a really lot of gusto, if you've brought him that way, you can usually walk it around the boat more, right? You can usually take it anywhere you need to because sure. Now you're okay. Leading the fish. The fish is not leading you is the point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If it hits in the corner and it goes away from you, now you have to bring it back to you. You see what I'm saying? I'm keeping it where I want it. I'm not letting it dictate where and what it's going to do. If it wants to go down, I'm still above that fish and I have good tension and good pressure on that fish. Right?
Consistent tension. Yeah.
What I say, key. And
yeah, a lot of them are going to dive bomb on you.
And if you're trying to conceptualize what I'm getting at is here, is let's say it eats in the eight, you're in free spool, and it decides to go 20 feet away from the boat in a heartbeat. Lickety split, right? It makes muskies make runs, not big runs, but they make runs. You know, and it's thrashing and bashing. The deal there is now you have to turn it back to you, which enlarges hooks holes, takes pressure, and now you've got the fish coming back at you, and it could just run the other way. So you're in a losing position of, if it goes that way and it's out of control and it's doing all this goofy stuff, you might be in the game of picking up the slack on a fish that's hooked. It's got more leverage than it should, right? Mind you, this is in a perfect scenario where everything is going the way I want it to go, right? There have been plenty of times where I've gotten to eat in the figure eight on a big fish, and I think I'm going to do that, and I find out real quickly it's not going to let me do that, right? So don't get me wrong.
And in the meantime, meantime, take a glance to your right or your left, wherever you're positioned on the boat, and make sure that thing's not laid somewhere where you're going to have all of a sudden have to walk 5 or 6 feet to your left or right, and there's a rod in the way lure sticking out. And I stepped on that, and now it's in the net. Your net man's got to clear the area. That is super important.
That's a whole other animal of control and consistency that drives me nuts.
Keep a clean boat.
And the old filth rig, you know, here's everything everywhere. There's enough of a mess. There's enough stuff. I tell people all the time, and I'm guilty as charged. There's been times I've had crap laying everywhere or whatever, but not in recent memory, where I've lost enough fish at this point where I go, avoidable mistakes are inexcusable.
There you go.
And a lot of what I'm preaching at people anymore are, here are my mistakes. Here are to avoid them. Don't do it. You know, hell, we were just talking about this. It all parlays, man. Talking about this a minute ago about what mistakes you've made in the past. How do you avoid them in the future? Well, first and foremost, for landing muskies, not setting booby traps for yourself, because that's what they turn into. Mm-hmm. Right? And, you know, guiding, I ask people all the time, I say, hey, can we put that back there? You know, things shouldn't move around the boat. You know, we're not putting the cooler over here and then later in the day moving over. Okay, this is where things belong. And it might seem neurotic, but it's the neurotic part.
There's a reason for it.
There's a reason, which is like, okay, trolling rods are in the back corner there because we're not going to have to do that. We're not, you know what I'm saying? I have a landing game plan. And the most important thing you can keep in mind is having a game plan for things. And dudes lose muskies all the time. It never happens when you're expecting it. Right? We can all admit that. Very rarely are you like, this is when we're going to catch them, for most people. Therefore, like you said, your buddy's got his feet up, his rod sticking up the boat towards you. And now you're trying to figure eight, and the fish walks you right into his rod that's hanging over the side. Dumb stuff. Just get consistent about it. It's not stuff that's not bothersome. It's not like this is going to ruin your life. But okay, if you're not fishing, lay your rod on the gunwale. Lay it down. Right? Don't stick it sticking off the side of the boat. Don't leave a pile of lures near the net. Don't leave lures laying around the deck. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this. Because immediately when it comes to landing fish or netting fish, I already look at, got a trolling motor, I got my big engine. I already have two obstacles. You already have two freaking grenades in the water to deal with.
Yeah.
Why add a third? Why add a fourth? I would love to have power poles. It'd be really convenient some days when the boat ramp is just full of knuckleheads. I don't want to add a power pole because I got a camera in the back. Now I got, you know, how many vertical obstructions do I have? Right? And you look at your boat and you go, what obstructions, what problems have I in the chance that I hook into this 4-footer this dude's talking about in the figure eight? What scenarios are going to play out? What problems have I made for myself? If you lose a fish because of your stuff you did, if you set yourself up for failure, don't cry about it. Right? That's like kind of part and parcel. Or if you want to do it well, preparation. It sounds, the older I get, the lamer it gets, Jay. Right? It's not rough. It's be prepared, right? You know, rough and ready. I mean, so what? You got some beers in the boat and it's just you and your buddies. Just don't do dumb stuff, right? Don't have crap hanging out the boat. Don't have a pile. I've seen it so much in musky guys' boats. Here's 400 lures laying on the carpet. Recipe Absolutely. For losing fish. Anyway.
Yeah, there's that would be avoidable learning curves. Yeah, you know, stuff. That's just all you got to do.
But, I mean, when it comes to these, back to the big fish, back to the four-footers, back to the figure eight fish like that, just the best thing you can do is be ready to net that fish and force it. Because they're, you're already under a lot of pressure. And the way I think about those big, heavy fish on a short line is every second that the hole or the hook has made penetration there, there's a lot of force going on. It's just widening. And the second that fish can get leverage on that bait to sling it, it's going to sling it. Get it in the net. And that's when having a, like you said, a boat partner that's on top of it, right? Ready to go. Another point to that is going to be when it's time to commit on stuff like that, commit. Bury that fish in the net. You know what I'm saying? Don't yep. wait. Don't wait around for, hey, this, that, and the other. Get it in the net. And I think that's just another one thing I'd just blast on you. When it is time to net the fish, net the fish. It's a fish. You can drag it in the net no matter how hard it's pulling. Right? And people will give what costs guys a lot of muskies every year is they'll give that fish an inch when the net's in the water. Where is it going? Down. What is in the water now? The net. Where is it going to hook inevitably? The outside of the net. Right? You see what I'm saying? It's like, when I'm going to scoop that fish, I'm yelling, commit, 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 commit. There's no coming off of that, right? You've got the leverage, bury that fish in that. That's a whole other thing. Sean, I'm a piker from the UK. It's like we manifest, Jay. We're just talking about old Greg, and here's a piker from the UK. I'm a piker from the UK, and I always look forward to the Musky 360 podcast. I learn something new every time, and most of all, you have me laughing. Well, that's because the British have a horrible sense of humor.
Wow.
And breakfast. Brutal. Your breakfast is horrible, too.
Oh,
beans geez. And coffee, Gavner.
Come on now, Steve.
Sorry.
Well, beans. He's never going to listen again.
Beans and coffee.
No, they have other stuff. Come on.
More. What? Ooh. Beans and orange juice, Jay. Just imagine. Just a can of Heinz baked beans and a giant glass of Tropicana to wash it down. Mmm.
Oh, man. Yeah, it can make me hungry.
Sorry, I'm just picking on him. Anyway, says, keep up the good work. You guys are awesome. And just to say, Joe Booker's tech articles are so inspiring. I love them. Tight lines. Well, that was just a nice email. That's what's wrong with the British, Jay. They're just too nice.
Quite often, that might be the case.
Quite often, that. You know what, though? If you want to know how to really mess somebody up, just be my age. Don't have cable television, but they play Monty Python nonstop on your local PBS. That's how you end up here. So, you know, can't go wrong there. Tim, I know I already answered that one. Oh, I'm scrolled the wrong way. Ken, hey, Steve and Jay. I like the new app update you released last year, but I was wondering how you could tell if a day is fair, average, good, better. Best on the previous moon face stuff. Is there going to be added back the app or tell how to read today? Okay, let me look here real quick. Right, so on the old moon phase, it had a day rating, you know, and that was very arbitrary. Let me leave it at that. Right,
mm-hmm, right.
That was based solely on solar lunar data. The closer you got to new moon or full moon, it would automatically say, "Hey, yeah, we're good there." Right. In as a replacement for that, and this is not a high skill thing. Let's just get that away. We're all adults. We can be honest here. There's a quote-unquote musky activity meter on the app. Now, for people that are just getting started in the sport or people looking to understand what makes things better, worse, yada, yada, right? This is based upon what is the solar lunar cycle, what is the illumination, how much light are you getting at any given time, and what is the weather, right? So I'm looking right now, you know, we're in a waxing gibbous. Wasn't he one of the Gibb brothers, Jay?
Oh, yeah.
Waxing gibbous, yeah.
Yeah, I did that song, right? Yeah. Gibb in my heart, in my soul.
Anyway.
Disco sucks.
Disco sucks. You're tuned in to Musky 420, where disco blows. Doesn't take much to distract this fella. But so with the musky activity meter here, it's taking consideration how much light you got. What is your weather? Right now I have 100% cloud cover. It's waxing gibbous, right?
Whoa.
Ooh. And pressure is, you know, 1,015 millibars, blah, 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 blah. So that will kind of rate the day on what is actually taking place. So if you need something, go, oh, this is a good musky day, Jay. Somebody asks you all the time, what makes for good musky weather? This is to give you a numerical score of what is happening. Instead of it just being based solely on moon, it tells you each and every day. Now, that is in lieu of some arbitrary star rating system that just is on a day because of the moon phase. So if you're looking for days previously, if you like that way that rolled out in the old app, that's going to be your highest score would have been on the new moon and the full moon. And it did not take in consideration what the weather was. But with the musky activity meter, that's going to score a day based on the actual weather, actual illumination, what's really going on there. So you could use that in a similar method, Jay.
Yeah, I mean, there's much more than just the moon. Come on. That's what's cool about that app.
There's more than the moon, he says.
Mm-hmm.
More. Mm-hmm. Is there, though? What if you're in the solar lunar moon cult, Jay? Live, breathe, eat, and sleep. Anyway, you say that. You know, I haven't said that. We don't talk about a lot of the stuff on the app because everybody listens to the show and people forget.
Like moon cults?
Moon cults. We haven't talked about that. Here's what I want to know. If the Earth is flat, how deep is it?
How deep is your lure?
If you
lure?
Want to know,
If
you want to know how deep your lure is, get out the Musky 360 app for premium trolling charts for free. I was just looking here. I look at it and refresh yourself if you have not for this season. It's something we don't even talk about, the spots and trails on there. My goodness, there's so much on here anymore. I was a busy bee over the winter, so. If you haven't looked in a while, if you're just listening to the podcast on other stuff, get out. I actually put up another article called Stop Chasing Musky Mojo.
Really, oh, new article? Oh, yeah, Stop Chasing Mojo?
Stop Chasing Musky Mojo. I'm just crapping on stuff. Felt squirrely that day, Jay.
I will check that out.
I was bored the other day off the water's edge. But anyway.
There you go.
Jay Bird, say good night.
Happy Memorial Day.
Self-control myself today.